morning. Today is Wednesday, January the 6th, sixth day of the new year. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County Supervisor and Chairman of the Board. But he doesn't sing, Mark Lovelace.
No, I am not Sinatra.
Good, yeah, because if you were, I'd have a newfound respect.
Yeah. Well, one on for your makeup. Back from the dead.
Yeah. So. Well, there's many different levels. There would be new stuff. Yeah. Oh, our quote this morning comes from, let's see, Mr. Justice Brandeis. That's kind of weird having the Mr. Justice, but I know that's formal, so I'll be semi-formal today. Quote, the greatest dangers to liberty lurk in insidious encroachment by men of zeal, well-meaning, but without understanding. So today we're going to try to break down that misunderstanding.
That's a good one.
With CEQA. And I suppose, Mark, CEQA is one of those things that if you're under 40...
Let's start with explaining the acronym.
Well, that's where I'm going. Under 40, you've heard it for your life, and it's been kicked around, ballyhooed about, positive and negative. And a lot of folks don't realize that there's a lot of people who don't even know what it means. Ergo, what does it mean?
Just as you were saying that, I was remembering getting a letter from someone sometime that thought CEQA was a word instead of an acronym and spelled it like S-E-Q-U-A or something like that. But it's actually stands for the California Environmental Quality Act, and this is California's framework, you know, legislation from 1970 for how we process and consider the environmental impacts of any discretionary decision at the state or local level.
What about water? What about zoning? What about air? What about those? Do they all fall underneath the auspice of CEQA? Or like fish and game? Does that fall under, or is that kind of running parallel too?
Well, there's the National Environmental Protection Act, or NEPA, was enacted in January 1st of 1970, and the state legislature, California, enacted CEQA that year to create a state framework. And so you have...
So they were the two were related?
Yeah, and so you have state agencies and federal agencies that have different but comparable roles and things. And sometimes, like, you know, on an issue like the KBRA, which unfortunately that agreement has, you know, fallen at this point. But, you know, this was two states, federal government, federal agencies, numerous tribes involved, some local governments. And so there were a number of different areas of, you know, we had California agencies acting under CEQA. We had Oregon agencies acting under Oregon's environmental laws, and the federal agencies having to act under NEPA. And so sometimes you have those kinds of conflicts, depending on...
kind of like when you're back in second grade and the teacher would post all the words, the four-letter words up on the wall. It was CAT, and everybody would say CAT. Now with all these acronyms, everybody recite. I suppose that's probably the point of demarcation for a lot of us, is that there's so many of these and so many layers and so many letters that we just kind of get all lost in and go, you know, okay, fine. And say, well, that's somebody else's bailiwick, and we kind of check out on it rather than paying attention to it.
Well, and, you know, when you ask about the different agencies, you know, there's also additional levels of complexity where, like with the state and regional water boards in California, they enact both the Federal Clean Water Act and the state of California's Port au Cologne Act.
So, good. We'll get into the acts when we come back. It's 8:19.
You've never heard us before because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mark Lovelace. Mark, before the break, we were talking a little bit about acronyms and where some environmental policy has come from. But you had indicated also that there's more layers to this cake than just having one at the state level and one at the federal level, that there's all kinds of other stuff also. How do you process through all these various entities that either want a piece of the action or feel like they have a piece of the action as you're trying to figure out if something's meeting standards, not meeting standards, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, you know, agencies either have a responsibility under CEQA or they don't. And so whether they want one or not isn't the question. Though in many cases they have the option of whether to assert their authority or not on an issue. So if we're doing
state fish and game, for example.
So if we're undertaking, you know, something like the general plan update, where there's areas of policy that the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, you know, may have some concerns or, you know, may be involved in it, or, you know, regional water boards or some other state agency may or may not have some thoughts on it, and they have the option, you know, they're a commenting agency, they may or may not choose to participate in our legislative process as we're coming up with you know, land use ordinances.
So such. They may not be specifically mentioned, but they have the opportunity to add comment.
They have authority which they may or may not choose to exercise in that case. But let's back up a little bit and start with, you know, the idea of CEQA. And the idea of the Environmental Quality Act is that it's to everybody's advantage to prevent impacts to the environment rather than to have to clean them up afterwards. You know, that let's try to, rather than having, you know, oil spills and landslides and polluted water and, you know, whatever, let's try to prevent the bad stuff from happening. And so that means we have to consider what are the possible bad effects of a project, and let's make sure that we've analyzed them to figure out how to, you know, mitigate those impacts. If we identify that there are potential impacts, how do we mitigate them to, you know, it doesn't mean make them go away completely, but below a level of significance is the language that's used.
That's what I was wondering. You said the possibility of an impact.
Yeah.
At what point does possibility give way to probably not? What is that
becomes,
risk point? Because I think the biggest issue that a lot of folks, at least I've heard from, is subject to this entity or this individual's interpretation, and they personally don't feel that blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Or they do feel that blah, 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 blah. And you're kind of like being bounced in a rubber room or being shaken up for mm-hmm. months because the words keep changing.
Well, and that becomes part of the discretionary process for the entity that's doing the study. For, you know, so if it's for us doing a permit at the local process or an ordinance at the at the local level, we have to decide which impacts we think, you know, are valid or not in terms of which ones we're going to study.
And then go forth with a project based on that. And if somebody makes a comment that is outside what you guys had determined?
Well, so it becomes, there's a risk factor in there, legal risk factor. But one other thing I wanted to say just in terms of the basics of it, of trying to prevent impacts rather than clean them up after, is another tenet of it in terms of the idea is that when you have an entity, you know, a person or an entity, whether it's a, you know, private individual, private business, or a, you know, public agency that's doing a project, that the person or entity that's going to benefit from that project should be the one that's responsible for the costs of preventing those impacts. So when an impact happens, you know, you're typically impacting other private individuals. You know, landslide that impacts people's property, or, you know, if a road fails and people can't get to their property, flooding that impacts, you know, so many properties around here. You know, there's things like that to where what someone does on their property shouldn't impact other people's property.
And so, how do you avoid the frivolous? I mean, the timber harvest plan is where I'm going. I know mm-hmm. that's not part of CEQA, but
it's somebody
from out of market saying, nah, 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 nah. You know, there's been examples in Oregon that I'm familiar with, those in California. Somebody completely not even of the neighborhood hasn't been involved with the process, but because they don't have any financial risk associated with it, they'll just lob things out there. And whether or not it's cogent or even germane to the discussion, doesn't matter. It slows the project up, and that's the end game for them. How do you avoid that? Or did CEQA even make any allowances for that going in, not thinking that that would happen?
Well, in the process, you know, for an issue to be considered, you know, you have to be able to show that there's a potential impact there.
So it's not opinion? You know, a lot of this is study-based?
Yeah, a lot of this is, yeah, that's why, you know, there's a preparation of an environmental impact report is to, you know, when you're starting the process and you say, okay, someone wants to do this project. Let's say the county was taking on a big project of our own volition to build something.
Airport in a sunny area.
There you go.
As an example.
Yeah, and if you can find one in Humboldt County.
Fine. So now we're truly fictional on this, so we're okay.
Let's say we were building an airport, a brand new airport, which, by the way, is not going to happen because there is no other area. But if we were, as part of that process, we'd be inviting, doing what's called scoping for CEQA, where you're asking all the members of the public, all the agencies out there, to help us identify what are the things that we need to study, what are the risks that we need to consider, the potential impacts that we need to look at. And through a scoping meeting, hearing where people will come and be able to comment on that, and through letters and other kinds of input, we'll assemble that list of stuff. And that becomes the list of things that we then need to study through the process.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Chairman of the Board, Mark Lovelace. When do you feel like you get hit stride on that one?
On chair?
Yeah.
First time I make it through a meeting without screwing up. How's that?
10, 11 months?
We'll see. December 31st of next year will be kind of my, hopefully I'll get something in that time.
Okay. Have a press release sent out when it happens. We all want to appreciate it. This morning we're talking a little bit about the processes of environmental law in California and with the overlay of federal and all the different agencies that are involved. Mark, you were talking about scoping out a project, which I think for most of us says those who want to comment on it can see what the project is and then start to either make their positions known or make the decision, that looks okay for me.
So we were using the example of a new airport.
For Lovelace International.
Yeah, which is, of course, what it'd be called. Yeah. Kind of chair and all, when you're scoping, you might have people say, I live nearby that and noise is going to be an issue. I'm really concerned about that. Or, I'm concerned about that you're going to have to cut a lot of trees to, clear the glide path. And that's going to affect, my view shed. It's going to affect solar access for my house or, whatever. People will say those kinds of things. And then other people, may speak on behalf of, wildlife and other broader impacts. Such as that, and that becomes the list of stuff that you have to study. And when you study it, the study may come back and say, well, we looked at this, but we actually don't think there's going to be any impact to this, or we looked at this and this is a valid issue, but we think that it can be mitigated by doing X.
The points that are raised during that process, is that public comment as well as...
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you avoid the really innocuous, weird, goofy ones? Or can you just say, we decided that we're not going to address these areas because really not pertinent?
In the process, you have to address all of the impacts that are listed, all the potential impacts that are brought to your attention. It doesn't say that you have to address all of them as equally valid. You may determine that there's a lot of potential impact for you're going to be grading this huge area for this airport. There's impacts to wildlife. There's impacts to water quality. There's all of these kinds of things they have to deal with. But someone else that says, but when you do this, it's going to create a big blank spot that's going to, the sunbeams are going to bounce off the earth and off the moon and back into my bedroom window. And you could have some crazy things like that where you just kind of say, okay, comment noted.
Okay, so you don't have to, you have to include, but you don't necessarily have to respond.
Yeah, there's a reality factor. The catch-all, though, is at the end. All of the comments that have been put out there in the scoping process are the limited number of things that have to be addressed. If no one raised an issue, no one raised a concern, when you said we're going to be,
maybe. So if nobody says left-footed salamander.
Yeah, if someone said, I'm concerned that when you do this, it's going to block access to my house in some way, or, make it, too noisy for me to be able to use my backyard for picnics on, Sunday afternoons or whatever. If someone doesn't raise an issue in the process, then they give up their ability to complain about that issue further on. They don't have legal standing.
So the door gets locked.
Yeah. And so there's a timeline where it says basically throughout the whole universe of issues that you think we need to consider here. And if you don't think it's enough of an issue for you to get off your butt and come to a hearing or write a letter or let us know that you're worried about it, then why should we, have thought of it? If you didn't think of it, you're the one that's impacted and you didn't think of it, how should we have known? So that's why, it's important for people to, put those concerns out there early on in the process. And again, they may not all be valid concerns. They may be looked at and they can either be not a valid concern, or they can be one that there is an impact there, but we think it'll be below a level of significance, or there's an impact there, but if we do these mitigations, we think we can mitigate it to below a level of significance.
So be quiet, sit down, take a number.
And then there's also others where, when you're doing something large, like an airport that's, I don't know how many,
Well, it is an international.
Yeah, okay. An international one in Humboldt, yeah. So that's going to clear, a number of square miles in that big, flat, sunny spot that we have somewhere, right? Okay, presumably to do that, we're going to have to knock out some hills to create that big of a flat spot.
Cantilever heavy.
If we were going to do that, there are going to be huge impacts that cannot be mitigated. And sometimes with a project, the nature of the project, the importance of it, the decision can be made that there's unavoidable impacts from this, and you have to,
And then you just do the balance.
You have to determine that the greater public benefit of this, is worthwhile. So, but that has to be a finding that's made by the body that's approving the project.
Well, what about those who are? And I'm using a reference in Oregon that I'm familiar with, completely out of the area, have not been to the area. They make their comments, and it is a punch out. You recognize it almost verbatim from other similar projects in other locations throughout the state. I mean, you can tell what the game is. How do those get, or do they get, shunted off to the side?
Process is your best protection. For the local agency. And the thing is, if someone's commenting on, the concerns for, some type of salamander or something like this, obviously the salamanders themselves are unlikely to be showing up at public hearings and, writing letters. So you've got, someone that's commenting on their behalf or on, the issue of water quality or whatever. And you know, anyone from anywhere can, you know, their concerns in that case are either valid or not. It doesn't matter whether you live next door or whether you live in, you know, on the East Coast.
Well, let's say there's no moisture in our potential airport site.
But so again, the concerns are either valid or they're not. And if someone raises concerns, you know, if someone raised concerns about, you know, the impacts to the desert tortoise, and we say, well, there are no desert tortoises.
A better example.
You right. know, where we're going to be building this, then, you know, the fact that you raise that, it's like, eh. But do you
have to do a study, though, to prove that there's no desert tortoise on the top of the hill where the international airport is going to go?
So if it was habitat that's characteristic for it or whatever, you know, if there's a strong argument that, you know, it becomes a matter of if there's enough of a risk that there may be a certain endangered species there, then, you know, it's worth your while to, you know, look for that and make sure that you're addressing that issue.
Is there any opportunity?
But if something goofy like, you know, well, desert tortoise, it's like, there aren't.
Okay, so let's say we've got our desert tortoise, and we say, no, we're not gonna. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, maybe we do need to take a look-see at this. Mm-hmm. The financial impacts of having to do this, even if there's only, let's say, a 5% risk or a 2% identifiable risk, that cost seems to be what really makes things so difficult in a lot of the projects. Is there any relief? Maybe not for the international airport we're talking about, but let's say the garden shed in your backyard that you want to put in, it's close enough to, let's say, a creek, mm-hmm. that somebody's getting excited. I mean, is there any relief for the entity if it's not a large entity, if it's just a mom and pop kind of thing? Does that help out at all, or is this a black and white square corner thing?
Well, so when the kind of thing that you're talking about is why we have the general plan. The general plan is supposed to do the EIR for all development that's principally permitted under it. So what we're saying is we're going to look at this huge amount of, you know, land use countywide for people to be building homes and just doing, you know, this kind of stuff, and saying that everything that's done in accordance with the general plan, because we have looked at, you know, the impacts as it would happen, we've determined which ones can be principally permitted under this and which ones would require some additional review under, you know, for a conditional use permit and their own EIR. But so that kind of thing, what we're going to do is we're going to say, look, we don't want people that are just out building, you know, just a single family residence or adding on a garage or a shed or something to have to do an EIR on a project by project basis. Let's do a single EIR for the entire county.
We'll be back with more from Mark Lovelace.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:49, final minute this morning with Mark Lovelace. Mark, as chairman of the board, I know that you've done the rodeo before. It's not as novel. What do you see? What are you hoping for this year? What are you hoping to be able to preside over?
Well, in theory, we should be finishing up the general plan update after only 16 years. This year. Well, it'll be 15 and a half by the time if we bring it in on schedule, and that would be sometime in October. Every deadline so far has been missed, so I'm certainly not going to be putting money on the table for that one, but that would be a nice thing to see finally completed so that we can focus on other things.
Well, you know, even if you just had a list of all the supervisors who were involved during the process.
Yeah. That alone is going to
be another 3 or 4 pages for you.
All planning commissioners.
Well, I hope you see it happen. Thanks for coming by.
Happy New Year to you.
And to you, sir. Join us tomorrow morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out, make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you then.